Would you like some sauce with that grilling?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. This morning, Congress will likely be lathering it on thick. Bank CEOs go before a committee to testify about the massive cash infusion that took place last fall. Several of the executives say they loaned out more money because of it. But of course, there have been lots and lots of criticism about where the money's gone or the fact that there hasn't been much accountability. We're joined by Representative Jeb Hensarling, a Republican from the 5th District of Texas. He's a member of the House Financial Services Committee. Congressman, what's the first question you'd like to ask one of those CEOs?
Well, I would like to ask them, in some respects, what were they thinking in taking the taxpayer money and assuming that life could go on as usual? Having said that, I don't necessarily want this to turn into a public beheading of 8 CEOs. A lot of the blame, frankly, belongs with Congress. Congress gave Treasury a blank check. Treasury turned around and essentially gave these banks a blank check. Congress should have written a law that required more transparency and more accountability, and that's where the real fault lies.
If this cash infusion was supposed to increase lending, why do you suppose banks have been reluctant to do that?
Well, I think it was more than that. The theory was that to stop a bank panic, you had to have an infusion of capital, not necessarily that that would lead to more lending. Frankly, I want banks to make decisions about who they lend to. Part of the reason that we're in the economic challenge that we're in is that congressional policies attempted to force, incent, or browbeat financial institutions into loaning money to people to buy homes who couldn't afford the homes. I don't want to repeat that mistake as we try to pull out of this mistake. There has to be accountability on what are they doing with the taxpayer money, and the taxpayer may make the decision he wants his money back.
Representative Jeb Hensarling, 5th District of Texas, thanks for taking time to speak with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
After a big sell-off yesterday in response to the Treasury Secretary Geithner's ode to Bank Rescue 2, Wall Street seems to be buying again. Dow is up about 1% so far, more than 72 points. NASDAQ up about 1%. S&P 500 up, you guessed it, about 1%. Europe's up slightly or flat this hour. Hong Kong down 2.5% today. The Commerce Department says the U.S. trade deficit shrank by 4% in December. The global financial fallout cut imports and exports for the 5th consecutive month. Imports of autos and auto parts were the lowest since May of 1999. Maybe we can blame the fallout on our genes. There's a new study out today that links, if in a small way, our genetic makeup to the amount of risk we're willing to take with our savings. From the Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio, here's Marketplace's Janet Babin.
Dopamine and serotonin are brain chemicals that play a role in behaviors like addiction or how neurotic we are. According to the study, two genes that regulate these chemicals are culprits in our economic behavior. Northwestern University professor Camilla Kunin gave students money to make 96 investment choices. Then she took some of their saliva to get their DNA. Students who carried specific varieties of the genes made risky investments 25% more of the time than those without them. But Kunin says her study didn't take into account how we grow up.
Only 30% of variation in risk-taking behavior is due to our genes. The rest of 70% comes from other things like your life experience, your cultural background, your education.
The risk-taking variants that Kunin identified are also linked to how much our ancestors moved around. The farther they traveled, the more likely you are to make risky financial choices. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for this Wednesday, February 11th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. The hedge funds are getting it right at last. The speculators had a terrible time in 2008, but now they seem to have turned the corner. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, reports.
The hedge fund industry has made a profit for 2 months in a row. This is the first time that's happened since last spring. 2008 is a year the hedges would prefer to forget. Currencies, commodities, stocks and bonds were all over the place. Markets were difficult to call. Many funds went bust. Ian Morley is with Corazon Capital. He says the recent pickup may be the Darwinian principle at work. The hedge funds that have survived are the fittest.
There were a lot of people who came into the hedge fund industry. A lot of those people got put out of business, and those that are left standing are going to be those that tend to have more of a skill in making money in a hedge fund way.
He claims the hedge fund industry's return to profitability is a good sign for the global economy. It suggests that markets have settled down a little and become a bit easier to predict. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This morning, the Energy and Commerce Committee is holding hearings on the Salmonella outbreak in peanuts. The FDA traced the outbreak to a processing plant owned by Peanut Corporation of America. That plant is located in tiny Blakely, Georgia. It's been shut down, and its employees, its 50 employees, laid off. Now, that's worsened the economic situation of a small farming community already hit hard by the fallout. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
Blakely, Georgia calls itself the peanut capital of the world. The town even has a statue of a giant peanut in its central square. Rick Hall is the mayor of Blakely.
It's a granite monument that has a peanut on top of it, and it was erected back in the 50s.
At the height of the peanut boom, Blakely had 30,000 residents. That population has now fallen to 6,000, as foreign competition and reduced federal subsidies have hit the local farm economy. Hall says it will be hard for Blakely to recover from the closing of the Peanut Corp plant.
Certainly it has devastating effect to those 50 employees, but our biggest concern is hopefully that this doesn't cause further erosion of our population by folks having to move to try to find employment somewhere else.
Hall says he's confident this Salmonella scare will pass, and in Blakely at least, peanuts will once again be king. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
This week, Google announced it's developing a free web service to help people track their home energy use in real time. The search giant says users of its Power Meter application can cut their electricity use by as much as 15%. But Google also stands to gain from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk. Here's Sam Eaton.
The only way to get consumers to use less energy is to first provide them with detailed information on how they use it. And that's something Google knows how to do. Kirsten Olson Cahill manages Google's Power Meter program.
Our bread and butter is organizing information and making it useful and accessible. And so energy information is no exception to that.
Google would partner with utilities that install smart meters on customers' homes. Those meters provide the raw data on home energy use down to each appliance. And the technology is about to get a $4.5 billion boost from the congressional stimulus package. Analyst Rob Enderle says Google stands to gain.
So, for instance, they would know how many old TVs might be in a particular demographic and then would be able to target that demographic with offers for newer TVs at a time when those folks might be willing to buy them.
Creating a new breed of advertising and a new reason to speed up the so-called smart grid revolution, profits. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
The Senate finally approved a new version of the stimulus package, but debate continues about whether it's a good idea. Commentator Will Wilkinson isn't so sure, and he thinks there's more psychology than theory at work.
The government is about to spend $838 billion in taxpayer dollars on the premise that the economy otherwise risks spinning into a sort of death spiral. So how exactly is this supposed to work? The terrifying fact is that nobody really knows. The president's idea is that American investors and consumers are undergoing a self-perpetuating crisis of confidence, suffering from depressed animal spirits, to use John Maynard Keynes' famous phrase. Consumers, fearing the worst, cut spending. And that hurts retail sales, which hurts profits, which leads to layoffs, which leads to a new round of anxieties for creditors and consumers, and on and on and on. A big blast of tax cuts and government spending, a sort of economic shock therapy, is supposed to jolt us out of our self-reinforcing funk and put us on the happy path to recovery. In this Keynes-inspired view, anti-recession macroeconomic policy turns out to be a kind of government mood manipulation. Sadly,
Macroeconomists are amateur psychologists at best. They simply don't know which interventions reliably buoy consumer and investor confidence. Indeed, many leading macroeconomists say there's little evidence that slashing taxes and boosting spending works well at all, even in theory. And the massive stimulus package we're about to get is far from a work of economic science. Harvard's Robert Barrow, one of the world's most influential macroeconomists, says the bill's tax cut and spending provisions are both garbage. The idea is that stimulus will revive flagging animal spirits by actually priming consumption. But an ill-designed set of initiatives, a bunch of garbage, may do little more than run up crushing deficits that we'll pay for in inflation or pass on to our kids. President Obama did promise to bring us hope. Well, I'm doing my best to hope this works.
Will Wilkinson is a fellow at the Cato Institute. Finally, things could get a little fuzzy for SiriusXM. The satellite radio company is in deep debt, and the New York Times reports it likely won't make its debt payment at the end of the month. Enter EchoStar, the TV satellite company. It's been buying up a lot of SiriusXM's debt lately, and there's speculation it may make a bigger move down the road. There's more on that report and lots more from our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, insidemarketplace.org. Once again, markets up. At this hour, the Dow up about 1%. More on the numbers at marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great Wednesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.